Of great dying. Three-quarters of all life forms on land and sea were extinguished on Earth. On Mars, every species above the complexity of lichen was destroyed. It would appear, then, that a torrent of death swept through the inner solar system some 65 million years ago. Beverly Urey was only a distant cousin to the Nobel laureate chemist, but she was an astronomer at the Keck telescopes in Hawaii, and the news media reporters tracked her down in the vast moonscape of Mauna Kea's ancient caldera. "We have a report from Princeton that said a torrent of death hit Earth and Mars 65 million years ago," one of the reporters shouted at her. "Well, yes," she replied, somewhat dazed by their numbers and aggressiveness. "I suppose you might say that." Torrent of death swept Earth and Mars. Hilo. A torrent of death swept both Earth and Mars 65 million years ago, according to a leading astronomer. Dr. Beverly Urey of the Keck Telescope Facility on Hawaii told reporters that the same swarm of meteors that wiped out the dinosaurs on Earth also killed the intelligent race that lived on Mars. According to Dr. Urey, "But they're not dead," said Hodell Richards with a thin smile. The host of the network TV show, a genial, intelligent man with a secret passion for astronomy, smiled back skeptically. "The Martians aren't extinct?" "Not at all." Richards had changed in the 7 weeks since the first discovery of the Martian building. His lean, ascetic face had filled out somewhat. His hair was shorter, more in style with the current fashion. He had shaved off his mustache. "But our scientists on Mars," Richards cut the host short. "Do you really think they're telling us the whole story?" he asked archly. "They're not?" "Of course not. They couldn't. The government won't let them." "But the Mars expedition isn't being run by the government." Ignoring the inconvenient fact, Richards looked straight ahead into the camera. "As I've been saying all along, the Martians have established a secret base for themselves here on Earth, in Tibet. We've got to find it." Arching a brow, the host said, "You think, then, that the Martians pose a threat to us?" "They're here to conquer us through genetic engineering. They want to plant their seed in Earth women and create a new race of Martians here on Earth and take over our planet." The host kept his quizzical smile in place, but inwardly he was thinking, "The things I do just to keep the ratings up." Pete Connors sat at his desk in Tarawa, surrounded by phone screens that connected him with the Baikonur Launch Center in Kazakhstan, the office of the chairman of the International Consortium of Universities in New York, the International Space Station in orbit around the Earth, and the office of the woman who headed the expedition's logistics department 30 meters down the hall from him. Each of the faces on the screens looked harried, frustrated, almost angry. Each of them was talking, almost hollering at the same time. "All right," Connors said firmly. "Let's cut the crap." They all fell silent. "We've got to set the replenishment mission launch back from our current date. That's clear. All agreed?" Glumly, one by one, they agreed. "Okay, it's no gutbuster. Nobody's head is going to get chopped off, and the people on Mars won't be endangered by the delay. Is that clear?" Nods and mumbles. "I know you've all been getting a lot of pressure from the media. Just ignore it." "And just how in hell do we do that?" asked the launch director at Baikonur, a grim-faced Russian. "Buck any and all media questions to me," Connors said. "I'll handle the news jocks." "Really?" asked the woman in New York. With a sweetly reasonable smile, Connors replied, "Yep. I'm setting up a major media conference right here on this balmy tropical isle. Get those suckers out here and off your back so you can do your work, and we can entertain them with swaying palm trees and a tour of the mission control facilities." "I get it," said the engineer in the space station. "It's the slow season for tourists down there." Connors smiled toothily. "You got it." Once she got rid of the reporters, Beverly Urey returned to her work. Hypothesis: a giant swarm of meteoroids swept through the inner solar system roughly 65 million years ago. Evidence: mega extinctions on both Earth and Mars caused by the impacts of the meteoroids. Question 1. Impact craters have been found on Earth and associated with the KT extinctions. Can we find similar craters on Mars and get accurate dates for them? Question 2. The Moon would have been hit too. Can we locate craters of that age on the Moon? And what about the other planets? Question 3. Can we find the meteoroid swarm? She sighed as she pondered that last question. 65 million years ago. Whatever's left of the swarm is much too far away for our telescopes to detect. Then she sat up, eyes suddenly wide with fear. Unless their orbit is bringing them back toward us. Fratello Di Nardo knelt in the small confessional. Usually its dark, cramped confines brought him some measure of comfort, like a return to the womb. But not today. His confessor, on the other side of the screen, sat down heavily, making the wooden bench creak. Di Nardo smelled the priest's aftershave lotion. It overpowered the distant scent of incense from the altar. "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned," Di Nardo began his confession. The priest said nothing, waiting. Di Nardo swallowed hard, tasted bile. He took a breath, then whispered urgently, "I have sinned against the first commandment." "The first commandment?" "I fear that I am losing my faith," Di Nardo answered, miserable.
"I don't understand," said the confessor.
"It's the Martians."
"The Martians are causing you to lose your faith?" the priest whispered, clearly puzzled, alarmed.
"Yes."
"How can this be?"
Di Nardo hesitated. Then he explained. "How can a just and merciful God create a race of intelligent creatures and then kill them all?"
"How do you know?"
"They were intelligent," Di Nardo hissed. "They constructed buildings. They invented writing. I cannot believe that they did not have souls."
"Yes, perhaps they did."
"Then how could God have destroyed his own handiwork?"
"We cannot fathom the workings of divine purpose," the confessor said.
"It isn't right," Di Nardo whispered harshly, "to kill them all of them." The confessor was silent for several moments. Then he whispered,
"Judgment Day has already come on Mars."
Di Nardo gasped at the thought.
"Apparently," the confessor went on, "God decided to bring the Trail of Tears on Mars to an end. He called the Martians back to him. Their time of testing ended 65 million years ago."
"Judgment Day," Di Nardo murmured.
"It is not our place to question God's actions. We must accept what he has done."
"Judgment Day," Di Nardo repeated.
"It may seem harsh to you, but the Martians are now in their heavenly home, looking upon the face of God. Is that a cruelty?"
Di Nardo almost laughed aloud.
"No, Father. You are right, of course. I was looking on it from a strictly secular point of view.
For your penance, I think perhaps a retreat would be in order. Renew your spiritual strength, my friend."
"Retreat?"
Di Nardo stiffened at the thought. "Spend a week or more in prayer and meditation, cut off from the rest of the world? Miss the news from Mars?"
"That would be penance indeed," he thought.
4. The Decision. Listen to the wisdom of the old ones. Coyote is the trickster who brings misery to the people, but sometimes he helps them. No one can be all bad or all good. Afternoon. Sol 342.
"A thing of beauty is a joy forever," said Wiley Craig with genuine appreciation in his voice.
The garden enclosure by the new dome was finished at last, a squared-off structure of glass bricks built entirely of materials from the Martian sand. Craig and Rodriguez stood by the big parabolic dish of the solar mirror that had provided the heat for their kiln, admiring their handiwork. Rodriguez nodded inside his helmet.
"We finished it in record time, too."
Craig laughed.
Wasn't much of a record we had to beat, Tom.